Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, CFRO. I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Joanne Chang.
Hey, everyone.
And our technician, John Pranger, who is running the controls. Thank you, John. Today, we have two interviews lined up, which I am both really looking forward to. Mm-hmm. First, we have Josh Hooten from the Let Live Foundation on the air. If Josh's name sounds familiar to you, that may be because he is also the owner of the Herbivore Clothing Company in Portland, Oregon, which is part of Portland's fantastic vegan mini mall. Mm-hmm. He will be on the show today to talk to us about the upcoming annual Let Live Animal Rights Conference in Portland this June, and will be giving us out-of-towners some personal recommendations on fun things to do while in Portland. And for our feature interview, we'll have Claudia Lee of the local nonprofit organization Shark Truth on the show. Shark Truth's goal is to educate the community on the shark finning industry to get people to stop creating a demand for this cool delicacy, which is actually very high in demand worldwide and even in Vancouver, which we'll learn more about. They are also currently running a splendid contest that goes in line with their mandate, and Claudia will be telling us about that as well as their general campaign. And now I'd like to talk a bit about the disastrous oil spill that has occurred off the Gulf of Mexico just a few weeks ago, which you've probably all heard about by now. This oil spill is on track to become one of the worst in history, surpassing the damage done by the Exxon Valdez tanker that spilled 11 million gallons of oil into the Prince William Sound in 1989. It means a monumental threat for the marine habitats, beaches, wildlife, and human health. You can just imagine how many animals are being affected and going to be affected with this man-made disaster once the spill permeates the coast. And you may be wondering what you can do about it, especially if you are so far away as we are here in Vancouver. I was thinking about this myself this week, and then just yesterday, a wonderful blog entry addressing this very issue was posted on the Liberation BC blog, so I'd like to direct you there for more information on what you can do. There is also an organization called PATH, People Protecting Animals and Their Habitats, that is already active in collecting supplies and donations to send to the Gulf, where help is being activated to help the wildlife in need. You can make a donation to them on their website at www.ppath.org, and all funds collected will go to animal rescue efforts. The International Bird Rescue Research Center is also currently active in getting animal or help to the animals in need. They have already deployed a team of bird rescue specialists to the Gulf Coast to help with a large effort to rescue seabirds caught in the oil spill. They are working with Tri-State Bird Rescue, the lead oiled wildlife organization on the ground, to set up and staff rehabilitation centers in Louisiana, Alabama, and Florida, where the growing oil slick is expected to impact birds. You can support their work by going to their website at www.ibrrc.org to make a donation. Also, here's a rather unique way that you can help that doesn't really involve any money. If you own a hair salon, an animal grooming business, or are just a regular individual with access to unneeded hair, yes, I did say hair, the organization called A Matter of Trust is taking donations of hair and nylons to put to use towards cleaning up oil spills. Hair is an efficient and abundant material for collecting and containing petroleum spills, and thousands of people are sending in their hair clippings to this organization to help clean up the spill. Now, it makes sense why you have to shampoo your hair all the time, because it collects oil so well, and the nylons hold in the hair. To learn more about donating your excess hair, go to www.matteroftrust.org, and please also check out the Liberation BC blog post on these and other suggestions at blog.liberationbc.org. And now, for a completely different topic, we would like to ask you some questions. Are you opinionated and like to hear the sound of your own voice? Are you committed to the goal of creating the least harm and respectful treatment of all living creatures? Or are you a technical, techie kind of person who likes to play with fancy equipment all for a great cause? If you answered yes to any of these questions and are occasionally free on Friday afternoons, then we want to hear from you. We here at Animal Voices Radio are looking for occasional guest co-hosts for our weekly show, just to get some varying perspectives on the show, and if being a famous radio star to educate millions of people around the globe on various animal issues sparks an interest in you, then please do send us an email and we'll talk. The Animal Voices Radio Show takes place in downtown Vancouver, BC, Canada, and so it's important that you be physically available to be present in our station studio while being a guest host on the show. Also, if you're not too fond of speaking on the air and are just interested in working in the control room, then we can talk about that as well. And full training on the controls will be provided. And actually, no prior radio experience is necessary. So we hope to hear from some potential guest co-hosts and look forward to meeting you. Please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com with the words guest co-host in the subject line. We thank you in advance. Now, Joanne, Liberation BC is putting on a demonstration tomorrow to raise awareness about the cruelties of the company Procter & Gamble, which makes all sorts of common household products on which they test on animals. And I've asked you to talk to us about this today to let us know exactly what is the deal with this company and their animal testing.
Mm-hmm. So tomorrow we'll be joining people all around the world in protest on the 14th annual Procter & Gamble Boycott Day. We'll be leafletting outside of the London Drugs on Robson near Butte from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. So it's just an educational event to get people to understand why they should boycott. So Procter & Gamble is the world's largest consumer product company. They make household and personal products, snack foods, pet foods, and a lot more. Their brands include Tide Detergent, Mr. Clean, Oil of Olay, Febreze, Pantene Pro-V, Herbal Essence, Gillette, Old Spice, Ivory Soap, Pringles, Iams, Eukanuba, Tampax, Always, and a lot more.
That's a lot of consumer products.
Yeah, and it's like things you find in homes everywhere, like because they're just the brands that we know. So you might be wondering why we're boycotting Procter & Gamble. Well, Procter & Gamble conducts painful and lethal animal tests. They use guinea pigs, rabbits, hamsters, ferrets, rats, and mice in their product safety research, as well as cats and dogs in pet food experiments. They don't test on animals because it's legally required, because it's not. Procter & Gamble tests on animals because of their desire to use harmful chemicals and to get new chemical ingredients onto the market. In the past, Procter & Gamble have conducted experiments where they force-fed large quantities of Tide detergent directly into dogs' stomachs for testing product toxicity. And some of the more recent Procter & Gamble tests include Iams and Eukanuba. I know this is a pet food brand that a lot of people use. They funded experiments that caused previously healthy cats and dogs to develop liver disease, obesity, allergies, and other symptoms. Many of the animals were killed and dismembered so Procter & Gamble can study the muscle development of the animals while on specific diets. In one of the experiments, 14 newborn puppies were manipulated with injections to develop allergens to various food ingredients. When the dogs were later placed on diets containing the allergen, they lost weight, developed moderate to severe diarrhea, hair loss, and itching. Twice during the experiments, the dogs had solutions of the allergy-causing ingredient injected into the lining of their stomach while under anesthesia. These dogs will remain allergic for the rest of their lives. An IAMS executive once said that it was perfectly okay for dogs and cats to be caged for their entire lives to be experimented on by IAMS. In the last few years, Procter & Gamble have repeated painful lethal skin allergy tests on guinea pigs and performed lethal tests on mice for the sake of a washing powder chemical called NOBS. Astonishingly, the chemical had been found safe in massive trial on human volunteers and had already been on the market for use for several years. Procter & Gamble is now experimenting with nanoparticles that will penetrate skin and hair like no naturally occurring molecules would. So this is scary stuff. In one experiment, rats were put in an enclosure filled with nano soot particles and forced to breathe it in. They wanted to study the damage the nanoparticles have on the lungs. After the rats died, they were cut open and their lungs weighed twice as much as it did. Think of those wonderful nanoparticles invading your body next time you pour that Pantene Pro-V into your hair or slather your body with Oil of Olay. So product testing on animals is not required by law. The only reason companies like Procter & Gamble do it is because they're using chemicals that perform well but are extremely harmful to your health. There are plenty of companies that do not test on animals because they're using ingredients that are not poisonous, so they don't have to test them.
Right, natural ingredients.
Mm-hmm. You can find a list of products that don't test on animals on the website caringconsumer.com. And remember, whenever you buy household and personal care products, please make sure you find the label that says not tested on animals, or sometimes they have the little bunny symbol on them. These products are not really all that expensive when you think of the long-term consequences of your health, the environment, and the millions of animals that suffer and die needlessly in labs. And again, if you want to join us in educating consumers about animal testing, meet us outside the London Drugs on Robson Street near Butte at 2 p.m. tomorrow.
Thank you, Joanne. And I just have a question for you. If products have been or have been tested on animals, they don't usually say on them, these products have been tested
right.
on animals. But if they haven't been tested on animals, would they always say haven't been tested on animals?
Yes, most of the time people want to advertise that fact.
Okay.
And if you go on to caringconsumer.com, you will see the full list of brands that you recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they don't say not tested on animals, but I always just look for the little bunny symbol just to make
sure. That is getting more common. Thanks. I'm going to
mm-hmm.
check that out. So on to our upcoming events. Joanne's already told us about the demonstration that's happening tomorrow on Saturday, May 1st. So that's at the London Drugs at 1187 Robson Street between Butte and Thurlow in Vancouver from 2 to 3 p.m. On Sunday, May the 9th, it's Mother's Day and also Cow Ribbon Day. So remember to wear your cow ribbon this Sunday. Perhaps you've heard us speaking a few weeks ago about this campaign in which you've been invited to wear a cow-spotted ribbon on your lapel to show concern for all mothers on Mother's Day, including the cows in the dairy industry that have their babies taken away from them immediately at birth so that they can produce milk for humans to consume, and at the same time sending the male babies to be made veal out of, which is a very cruel and short mm-hmm. existence for the male calves. Please visit www.cowribbon.com for more info on this campaign for Mother's Day. And it's not too late to participate yourself, even if you don't already have a cow ribbon. You can make one by easily painting black dairy cow spots on your own homemade ribbon, or just go to cowribbon.com, the website, and use the cow ribbon images there to post to your Facebook profile or Twitter, as both Joanne and I have done. It's an effective way to raise awareness for these often forgotten mothers. On Saturday, May the 15th at 6:30 p.m., Earth Save Canada's monthly vegan potluck will be held, and it's open to everyone. This will be held at an Earth Save member's home in Kitsilano in Vancouver. This is a social gathering that Earth Save Canada puts on once a month in people's homes, and there are already 31 people signed up for this event with room for more. So that means that there will be over 30 delicious plant-based dishes for you to eat. Please bring a dish to share with no animal products in it so that everyone from omnivore to vegan can partake. There will also be a barbecue to grill veggies if it's nice weather. The exact address will be emailed out to those who RSVP, yes, and to do so, go to meetup.com and look up Vancouver Meatless Meetup to find the event there.
It's a great way for people who are newcomers to the vegan scene to taste different foods and learn mm-hmm. how to cook.
And longtime veggies like me and yourself who just like to eat a lot of different food.
Mm-hmm.
They're always fun events to attend. Finally, on Sunday, May the 16th at 6 and 8 p.m., there's going to be a three-course vegan secret supper at a secret location in Vancouver. Secret suppers are home-prepared meals served in people's homes for a set fee in a secret location. On the menu for this week, there's a fennel and portobello soup with sage, rosemary, olive oil, a cauliflower pea curry with baked mustard sweet potato on parsley quinoa with coconut sour cream and papadum, and chocolate cake with chocolate hazelnut caramel sauce and white chocolate lavender ice cream. How can you say no to that? So to make a reservation and for any questions, email vegansecretsupper@gmail.com. If you have an animal or vegetarian related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. Our first guest today is Josh Hooten of the Let Live Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization based out of Portland, Oregon. Its mission is to inspire activism for animals through community-based events that are both inclusive and inspiring. One of these events is the annual Let Live Northwest Animal Rights Conference, with which Josh is here to speak with us about today. Hello, Josh, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome, Josh.
Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Both Joanne and I have attended the Let Live conference last year and both really enjoyed it. I found it to be an energizing, inspiring, and educational experience, providing a great opportunity for networking with a broad spectrum of animal activists from North America. But before we talk about the conference, could you tell us, please, a bit about the Let Live Foundation? When and why was the organization originally formed, and who is it comprised of?
Yeah, sure, sure. The Let Live Foundation kind of formally came together as a nonprofit about a year ago, but we had been doing events and the conference itself probably for about 3 years before that. And the original concept began as a fundraiser art show that we held for the Shack 7 when they were about to go to trial years ago for violating the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. And we raised thousands and thousands of dollars, as did lots of people around the country, for their defense. They all went to jail anyways. And it really lit a fire under a bunch of people around the world and in Portland to get more active. So that's kind of where the fire got lit. And then Chad Miller from Food Fight had been doing a lot of AR-type events, and our store, Herbivore, had been doing stuff here and there, and I was helping out occasionally with Chad's stuff, and we just kind of needed a bigger umbrella to start doing stuff under, so it seemed a little bit more organized, and that's kind of where it all began. And right now, Let Live is mainly it's Chad Miller, Darrell E. Bechtold, Tim Hitchens, Shauna Ashlock, and myself.
That sounds great. In addition to the annual conference, you also have the Let Live Activism Series, which is a monthly series of speakers, workshops, and social events run by Let Live. Can you tell us about this series and about some of the series events that you have hosted?
Sure. We've done all kinds of events, really. We've done everything from film screenings to cooking demos to Skillshare events, and the idea behind those is that we try and keep people fired up throughout the year between the conferences, which is kind of that's kind of the highlight of Let Live's year is the conference, but you know, things can sort of quiet down in between. So and there's a lot of really great activists that are doing stuff year round in Portland, but it, for what we're trying to do, which is more of an educational type of thing, we try to get educational events going all year round. So under that, we've had a really pretty broad range of speakers. One of my personal favorites was that we had Lisa Shannon speak, and she's a vegan who does a lot of human rights work, mostly with women in the Congo. And she gave an amazing talk that talked a lot about the intersections between human rights abuses and animal rights abuses, or animal abuse. So that one was really amazing. We've had Jasmine Singer from Our Hen House give a great talk. We've had Justin Goodman, who does anti-vivisection work with PETA. Matt Rozelle is our hometown hero with In Defense of Animals, did a really amazing talk on how to engage people about fur. It's kind of a tricky issue that some people have difficulty talking about, myself included, so that was really great. Lauren Arnelis did a really good talk. She is from the Food Empowerment Project, and her talk was on food justice. So we've covered a whole bunch of different types of topics that all kind of animal rights is the launching point, but we try to, you know, we're very big on building bridges and trying to find other topics that that are related and that sort of thing.
All right, so let's talk about the conference. When is the Let Live conference being held this year, and what is it all about?
Let Live is this year. It's over the weekend of June 25th through the 27th, and it is in downtown Portland, Oregon, at Portland State University. This year we tried to do it. Since you all have been there before, you may understand what the format was like before, and we switched it up a little bit this year based on feedback we got. And this year we're trying to we've broken up the talks into hour-long talks, which we also had last year, but we are also doing hour-and-a-half-long panel discussions with multiple speakers so that topics can get covered a lot more. One of the criticisms we got about the last two conferences was that we had too much, we were trying to get too much stuff into too little time, so we're trying to...
That's always the case with AR conferences, I find. Mm-hmm. That's why you have to keep going every year. Can you tell us about some of the speakers attending the conference and what they'll be speaking about?
Definitely. We have a great list. We get a great list of speakers every year, and I don't know exactly how that happens, but it's always really flattering to us that, that we get the caliber of speaker that we do. So this year, Gene Bauer from Farm Sanctuary is going to speak about a number of things.
We love him.
Yeah, he's hard not to like. And wow, what a looker. Sorry.
All the girls like him. Yes.
He sat beside me last year. I was flattered.
So he's going to give us an update on legislative stuff going on with factory farming. He's also going to talk about a number of other things, but that's one of the things that we're most excited about. Alex Earle from Sea Shepherd is going to sort of give us a
Alex is actually from Prince George, B.C. I met him a couple years ago, or last year maybe, actually. So he's a homegrown B.C. boy.
Great. Didn't know that.
Cool. Let's see, what else we got? We have Daniel Hoff, who's the investigations. He runs the investigations for Mercy for Animals, which we're really excited about because Mercy for Animals has done some of the most amazing undercover work. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to talk to him about that stuff. Gary Lowenthal, who is who is sort of the heart and soul behind the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale, which is one of my all-time favorite outreach things. Will Potter from Green is the New Red. We try to have him every year. He's going to do a lot of talks on he's going to cover a lot of government repression stuff and green scare type stuff. Andy Stepanian, who was actually one of the Shack 7 and is now part of the Sparrow Project, is going to give us a few talks. All kinds of stuff.
There's a really great
course.
Yeah, you've got a really great list going.
So that'll be awesome.
So who is the conference for? Who is it geared towards and who can attend?
Let's see. The best way to answer that, it's just we have tried really hard in our discussions about we talk a lot about what the mission is and what we're trying to accomplish. You know, it's not really all that difficult to fill up a bunch of spots with speakers and then tell people to show up. So we have gone we've tried really hard to always kind of keep the mission in mind. And for us, it's really about casting as wide a net as possible and getting a range of topics in place that appeal to everybody from people that are just getting started all the way up to people that have been doing activism for years and maybe need a refresher or maybe just have a wealth of information that they can share with other attendees during discussions and so forth. So, you know, we've tried very hard to make the conference, the tone of it, as unintimidating as possible because I think that there's something for everybody
I think you've done a great job with that. I've only been there last year, and I just felt that, you know, no matter where you are at with your animal activism, you can find a workshop to go to. And there are people that I see there I don't see in any of my workshops because they have different interests than me. So I think you guys did a great job with that.
Oh, well, thank you. That means a lot to me because it's one of those things, you know, I go to lots and lots of conferences, and I like them all for different reasons, but some of them I go home feeling like I learned a lot, but I didn't get any real sense of community. Some of them I go home feeling differently about. But, you know, for us, I feel like the strength of our movement is the people in it, and tactics and theory and philosophies and stuff are very, very important. But they're kind of dead in the water if you can't connect with other people and make things happen. So for us, it's just been really important to set that tone. And we tell all the speakers that as well, that, you know, we don't all agree on tactics. We don't all agree on where we're at in the movement or what we should do or what our tone should be, but we all have way more in common with each other than we do with the opposition, and we should always respect each other's work and be open to it and those kinds of things. So that's sort of what we try to do to get people to think about if they want to come. And then it's open to the public. Anybody can come if they want.
And you know, you've kept the conference at a very affordable cost. Can you tell our listeners about how much it is to attend and how a person can sign up?
Sure, yeah. People can sign up at letlivefoundation.org. And, we've tried really hard to keep the conference affordable. It's $15 for the whole weekend.
You can't get a better deal than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we don't have none of us have a lot of money either. And so, it's just important to us that as many people can actually, you know, I think there's a lot of will to come. And I think that sometimes if it was really expensive, it would be prohibitive for some people, and that doesn't do anybody any good. So we do a lot of fundraising to try to cover as much of those costs as we can before the conference ever happens, so that we can keep that door cost in mind and keep it as low as possible.
Now, Josh, you happen to live in what is known as the vegan capital of North America, Portland, Oregon. We here at Animal Voices envy the abundance of longtime veganism that your city has to offer. Can you tell us, what is your favorite restaurant in Portland?
I can't tell you one, because there isn't one.
Okay, tell us.
If I did tell you one.
Billion. The top billion.
Tell us your top whatever, 3, 4, 5.
I've narrowed it down to 5.
Oh, okay.
But you know, yesterday I was telling somebody in the store, they were like, where should we eat? And I, without even pausing to inhale, I rattled off 12. So I'll just give you...
Oh.
I'll just give you...
That'll be our whole list here.
Yeah. I'll give you 4, and I narrowed them down partially on the fact that these are just all vegan places. So,
great.
Some of my favorite places aren't all vegan, but these ones are my favorites, and they're all vegan. So those are Blossom Lotus, mm-hmm. Native Bowl, which is a food truck, which is awesome, Portobello, mm-hmm. And Sweet Pea. Those are my 4 favorites.
Oh, the bakery. Yeah, I had been talking about Sweet Pea a month or so ago, and I couldn't remember the name of that place, but oh my goodness, I had the best peanut butter cupcake there ever. It was one of the best cupcakes I've ever had. It was so good. And I know some of the people at Let Live recommended that we go there for brunch on the Sunday, and we did. It was quite good as well. Totally fantastic.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's the vegan... there's the vegan mini mall.
Oh.
Right, which I believe is North America's only vegan mini mall, and that's in Portland. Why don't you quickly tell us about the mini mall, Josh?
Yeah, sure. The mini mall, it's funny. It's people probably show up and don't. It's not the mini mall that they're thinking it's going to be, but it's just a strip of stores all in the same building, and we're all friends. So the buildings are, and I'll go from west to east, are Sweet Peas on the Corner, which is, a vegan bakery, and they also have really amazing sandwiches now. Mm-hmm. Then there's Herbivore, which is our store, and we have clothes and shoes and 800 million cookbooks and belts and wallets and art and cards and stuff. And then Food Fight is next door to us, which is the vegan grocery store. And on the other side of Food Fight is Scapegoat, which is a vegan-owned and operated tattoo shop. And people often ask what's not vegan about tattoos, and sometimes the inks aren't. But to me, so Scapegoat's different because they don't use any razors or cleaning supplies that were tested on animals, and the people there are vegan. So when you give them money, they don't go buy a hamburger with your money.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a place to stop off at if you're attending Portland for the conference. Thank you so much, Josh, for coming on the show to share with us all this great info about the upcoming Let Live Animal Rights Conference in Portland, Oregon, from June 25th to 27th, which is quickly coming up. To find out more about the conference and to register for it, please visit letlivefoundation.org or join the Facebook page by searching for Let Live Conference. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Bye. You are listening to 102.7 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver.
Okay. Is it time for the news?
It certainly is.
Okay. So we got a big win this week for the ducks. A federal court in Manhattan has ruled in favor of the Humane Society of the United States in its federal lawsuit charging Hudson Valley Foie Gras, U.S.'s largest foie gras factory farm, with numerous violations of the Federal Clean Water Act. This facility has flouted federal pollution laws for years, and we're delighted to see justice done for the environment, animals, and the local residents who have all suffered at the hands of this factory farm, said Jonathan R. Laverne, Vice President and Chief Counsel for the Animal Protection Litigation at HSUS. In its ruling, the court issued an injunction against further Clean Water Act violation by Hudson Valley Foie Gras, ordered Hudson Valley to hire an expert and take remedial action, provided that Hudson Valley will be fined $25,000 per day per violation for further violations, and ordered Hudson Valley to pay $50,000 for an environmental project in lieu of paying civil penalties. This next one is a shocking news. Heavyweight boxer Mike Tyson revealed to audience members during a taping of Center Stage that he's gone vegan.
No more ears for him, I guess.
Animal years or human years? So, since he's become a vegan, he says he's had no drama in his life right now, which he concedes is an odd thing for an athlete notorious for his brushes with the law. He has also lost a lot of weight and is looking really good. The episode of Center Stage will air May 26th.
I'm looking forward to hearing more about that.
So the Gentle Barn Sanctuary in Santa Clarita, California, has convinced the owner of a dilapidated dairy farm to release all 60 of his sick and malnourished cows to the sanctuary. The farmer would have sent these pregnant female dairy cows to slaughter, but thank goodness he didn't have the money to get them healthy enough to be transferred to the slaughterhouse. And I must add a side note here is that, you know, at slaughterhouses that slaughter dairy cows, a lot of them are pregnant. So, you know, lots of calves are born when they have their mother's stomach slit open at the slaughterhouse, and they're born on the floor of the slaughterhouse, and then they're killed. So, you know, if you think drinking dairy or eating cheese doesn't hurt animals, just think of animals being born on the floor of the slaughterhouse and then being killed on the moment they're born.
That to me is incredibly sad. I mean, not even a chance for life. Not one chance.
And that's very common in the dairy industry because they have to keep them pregnant all the time. So the Gentle Barn is looking for donations as they will need to build new barns to accommodate the 60 cows and their babies. According to their website, as dairy cows, these poor mothers have never been allowed to raise the babies they give birth to every year. With this rescue, we have an opportunity to not only save their lives and their babies' lives, but we can give them the chance to raise their new babies in safe, healthy, and safety, health, and happiness. Just in time for Mother's Day. Your donation to this rescue mission will be matched by a private donor. To find out more about how to donate, please visit gentlebarn.org. So that's it for this week's Animal Voices News.
Thank you. And once again, you're listening to 102.7 FM Co-op Community Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Our feature guest today is Claudia Lee from the local nonprofit organization Shark Truth. Shark Truth is a not-for-profit consumer awareness group that seeks to engage consumers in a collaborative discussion to find alternatives to shark fin soup. They are dedicated to promoting awareness around the irreversibly detrimental effects of the shark finning industry, specifically working with and not against consumers. Hello, Claudia, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. So I only first heard about your organization, Shark Truth, a few weeks ago, and you're based right here in Vancouver. Can you start off, please, by telling us about the organization, how and why you got started, and what your area of focus is in terms of advocacy for the sharks?
So my personal or my cultural background is my parents are from Hong Kong. I grew up in Canada, so I am Chinese. And I was doing the Honors in Sustainability program at SFU during my last semester a year ago. And my friend wrote a paper on this movie called Shark Water. And she's like, hey, Claude, like, do you drink shark fin soup? And I said, well, yeah, like, what's the big deal? It's just soup, right? And she's like, oh, you have to watch this movie. It's called Shark Water. So long story short, I watched the movie, and after I did, I was pretty uncomfortable. I couldn't sleep that night, and I was wondering how the movie basically talks about, you know, how sharks have been portrayed as these evil human-killing machines, and now they're being wiped off the face of this earth because of the increasing demand for shark fin soup, which is primarily demanded by Chinese consumers. So, you know, after I found that out, I was kind of like, well, that doesn't really make sense to me because, you know, I felt that I was somewhat, you know, eco-aware. Like, you know, I recycled and stuff, and I was like, how come nobody told me about this? So that's kind of where the inspiration for the project itself came from.
I think that's a great movie that everyone should see. It's people might think, well, what do I need to know about sharks, right? It's just a really interesting movie to watch. It's exciting to see this person's journey in trying to get the stop and to educate others, right? Can you tell us about the campaigns you are working on at the moment, and who is Harry?
So there's two parts to Shark Truth. The first is consumer engagement, and the second is public outreach. So on the consumer engagement side, we really want to build trust with the community and with consumers that drink shark fin soup, because a lot of other campaigns kind of attack the Chinese culture and kind of like shake the finger and say, oh, you guys are disgusting for drinking this. And that essentially builds walls and resistance that's not going to really effectively get the message across. So the consumer engagement part's really important to Shark Truth, and we just launched a wedding contest called the Happy Hearts Love Sharks Wedding Contest. So just a bit of background on that is that, you know, shark fin soup is most popular at wedding banquets, and that's why we decided to target wedding couples, so that, you know, they make the choice not to put shark fin soup on their menu, then, you know, none of their guests have to drink it, right? So the contest, all people have to do is go to our website at sharktruth.com, send in a photo or video of them saying they're not going to have shark fin soup, fill out a form, and whoever gets the most votes could win a trip to Mexico to swim with whale sharks, which are the biggest fish in the world. So that's our contest. And
I love it. I love the idea.
And the second part is public outreach. So what we try to do is stay, promote awareness about shark fin soup at Chinese community events. And the upcoming one is the Dragon Boat Festival, which is going to happen June 19th and 20th. And we'll be having a table there and showcasing the couples that entered the contest, and also handing out educational material to let people know about shark fin soup. So, and Harry, he is our sad little mascot who we're trying to protect from getting his fins from taken off for shark fin soup. And he is kind of, the face of our campaign, so to speak.
So can you tell us about the history of shark fin soup in the Chinese culture? This is something that I've only just looked up a little bit this week. It's something that I don't think people really know about.
Yeah, so shark fin soup, the dish itself was started from primary research. People tell us that it started in the Song Dynasty, so way back when, and it was presented as a very wealthy dish, because at that time, you know, to kill a shark for shark fin soup, they didn't have, you know, the technology or the tools, so you would be essentially risking the lives of your workers, right? So emperors and kings and high government officials would say, like, hey, look at this expensive soup that I'm serving to you. This is how wealthy I am. So that's how it started. And then it became part of something called the Big Four. So in Cantonese cuisine, during banquets, there's usually 7 to 10 dishes you'll see at wedding banquets, you know, baby showers, anniversaries, birthdays. And the Big Four is part of this big wedding banquet menu, and they have 4 dishes. Is abalone, shark fin, fish maw, which is a type of fish swim bladder, and the last one is sea cucumber. So each of these 4 items represent different things in Chinese culture, right? So like wealth, health, and they used to say, because the groom side of the family traditionally pays for the wedding banquet, and the wedding banquet's kind of like the big deal. They used to say that if there's no shark fin soup at the wedding banquet, that the bride's marrying into a poor family. So this was kind of, you know, a saying that was ingrained in our culture a long, long time ago. And if you ask people nowadays, they'd be like, oh, really? That's why? They won't know, because it's just been so deeply ingrained that it's become part of the tradition of having a wedding banquet. You always see shark fin soup on the menu. So Now, what shark fin soup represents is more of a symbol of respect rather than wealth. A lot of people think that it still represents wealth and prestige. And although that is kind of the underlying message, the biggest reason why people get shark fin soup is for respect. So it's kind of like, you know, if you invited, you know, someone over for a Christmas or Thanksgiving dinner, they might expect, like, you know, a big turkey or big ham, right? And if it's not there, it's kind of like, oh, well, what the hell, right? Mm. So it's kind of that same mentality when
That's
it comes to shark fin soup.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of the cost of the soup, I read this week that it costs $100 a bowl. Is that right?
Well, shark fin soup is kind of like, you know, brand name clothing. You can get anything from really cheap to really expensive. So usually the range is about $20 to $100 a bowl.
Yeah, so more than I'm willing to pay for a bowl of soup.
Yeah, so it's pretty expensive. And the reason why is just simply because, you know, it's very rare now. And it's expensive to get. It's expensive. It takes a long time to make. And how shark fin soup is served in two ways. It's served either, one, in a big bowl style. So you get a big bowl, and then the waiter or waitress splits it up. So the shark fin's actually all torn apart. It's, like, in little strands. And the second way it's served is having the entire shark fin actually intact with the broth. And that's generally where you'll find the more expensive range of shark fin soup. So that is usually for more, you know, high and wealthy consumers. But the majority of shark fin soup that's served in mainstream restaurants is in the big bowl style.
So please tell us, how are the shark fins obtained? Specifically, I'd like to know, how are they hunted and killed for their fins?
So there's targeted shark finning, and then there's long lining, and then there's also netting, right? What I know the most about is targeted shark finning, because that's the quickest way to get sharks and for their fins. So what happens is that, you know, fishermen go out in a boat, and they throw some bait into the water, and then they just essentially pick up the shark with a harpoon kind of instrument. So they stick it in their mouth or wherever in their body, pick them up onto the boat, and they slice the fins off. The one that's most valuable is the dorsal, the one at the top, and then they throw the body back in the water. That's targeted shark finning. And then there's also long lining, which is also used for tuna. So they have, you know, like kilometers and kilometers of fishing line in the ocean with baited hooks on them. So kind of whatever swims in the way and gets caught dies there. And that's another way of getting sharks for their fins. But the most popular way is targeted shark finning. So, you know, finding the area where sharks are most popular, picking them up with a harpoon, and slicing the fin off and throwing them back in the sea.
So they don't even use any other parts of the shark that for human consumption in any way?
Well, you know, there are people, like the fishermen might take, you know, a shark or two home for personal meat consumption.
Right.
But, you know, the reason why sharks, the primary reason why sharks are being killed is for shark fin, which is for shark fin soup. And, you know, sometimes you'll find, you know, shark jaws or like shark teeth for sale. But essentially those are very marginal reasons why sharks get killed. And plus shark meat is very high in mercury. And it also has a, it's very tough to eat. So it's not like a very sellable meat, which makes the practice extremely wasteful, right? You know, if you were to take the entire shark, that's kind of a different story. But what usually happens is because, you know, sharks can be quite big, they dump them over the boat so that they can make more room for fins.
Right, and sharks need to be continually moving all the time, and I don't think they can do that without their big dorsal.
Oh, no,
fin,
no.
Right? So they die.
So they die. So a lot of people think that actually sharks are like starfish, like they just grow fins back.
Really?
But,
okay, let's educate people truthfully here.
Yeah, so that does not happen. You know, it's just imagine like, you know, our legs or arms getting chopped off. We will probably bleed to death. We will bleed to death if nothing happens. And so they do die from bleeding to death. And the second thing is, you're right, sharks have to be constantly moving, and that's how they breathe. And without their fins, they can't move, so they die, right? But the primary reason why they die is because, you know, they bleed to death.
So when they throw them back in the water, they're still alive, and then they're just dying slowly
after
that.
Alive.
Yeah, they're finned alive.
I just want to remind our listeners that you are listening to 102.7 FM Co-op Radio. This is the Animal Voices Show in Vancouver, Canada. Claudia, where in the world are the shark fins coming from?
So the sad news is that they're coming from everywhere. places that import the most are Spain, is a top importer from Europe. And in Asia, you know, Indonesia, China, Taiwan, Singapore, India, and then in South America, Brazil and Argentina. So they're coming from everywhere. Like, you know, wherever sharks can be finned, they are. And the reason why is because it's hard to manage, you know, it's hard to control what's happening in the ocean. It's so big, right? And shark fin, though, it's actually 50 to 90% of shark fins traded in Hong Kong. And the reason for that is because, you know, that's where all the Cantonese people are, right? It's part of Cantonese cuisine, and that's where most of the shark fin trade happens.
And what kinds of sharks are being consumed in the shark fin soup?
Yeah, so that's also a good question, and it's all types of sharks. You know,
so
anything.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, right? Like the bigger the shark, the better looking the dorsal fin, the more expensive they'll sell for, right? So, for example, whale sharks are the biggest fish in the world, and you know, they don't even have teeth, but you know, they're still fin, and people still think they're scary. But that's a different issue. And so, yeah, any types of sharks, they don't really care how old they are. You know, anything from a fetus to, you know, a fully grown shark. And the dangerous thing with that is that shark's gestation is very slow. So you know, it takes up to 25 years for them to reach sexual maturity.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and they only have, when they do have pups, it's only about 2 to 3 pups. So it's because sharks have been around for so long, right? Like, they've been around for over 400 million years before dinosaurs were even on this earth. So they've, you know, adapted themselves and evolutionized themselves to stay around for a long time. They're just, they're top predators. So they live for a very long time.
So you spoke of Hong Kong being the largest consumer of the shark fins. What is it like here in Vancouver with our really large Chinese community?
So Vancouver is actually the city with the highest proportion of Chinese people in Canada.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of numbers, Toronto is the biggest. But in terms of proportion, Vancouver is the biggest. And Vancouver also has the second highest or biggest Chinese restaurant industry in North America, next to San Francisco.
I didn't know that either.
So a lot of shark fin is being consumed here, if you look at the numbers that way. The diasporic communities, Chinese communities around the world, Vancouver is quite big, and Vancouver is actually very renowned for its Chinese cuisine. A lot of famous Hong Kong chefs come here to start restaurants.
So I've read about, I read that the consumption of shark fin soup has actually gone up dramatically with the middle class becoming more affluent. And I'm concerned for the shark population itself. Is this something that we need to worry about? Are these sharks going to become extinct?
Well, you know, over 3/4 of oceanic pelagic sharks are pushed to an elevated risk of extinction, or they're, you know, they're threatened with extinction, and half of oceanic sharks are being pushed to an elevated risk of extinction. So, yeah, it's not only because there's a growing demand for shark fin soup from the middle class, but also just in general, people are consuming more. So, and these sharks, like I mentioned, their gestation is very slow, and they reproduce very little. So even if the middle class wasn't booming, we're still eating them way faster than they can reproduce.
What will happen to the oceans if the sharks become extinct?
So sharks are top predators in the world, and they are the top predator of the ocean. And the ocean is, you know, covers over half of the surface of the earth, and also provides over half of the oxygen for humans. So sharks are a part of this really complex system, and if you remove them, it's kind of like cutting the head off a body. There will be dire consequences, and there could be repercussions from every angle, and we don't know what they'll look like, but I don't think it's something that it's worth risking for shark fin soup. So hopefully that more people will be aware of this issue and spread, you know, the education to others.
Right. So please tell us about sharks' lives. I think not too much is known about these magnificent, powerful, and mysterious creatures other than what is seen in horrifying Jaws films or by hearing about great white sharks or tiger shark attacks of humans off the coasts of places in the south. If you were to hope to convey an appreciation towards sharks for the living creatures that they are, what would you want people to know about them?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, even myself, before I watched Shark Water, I'm just generally scared of water. So I was scared of sharks. And, you know, a lot of people think sharks are, you know, these dangerous, evil animal or human killing machines. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, less than 4 people get killed by sharks on average worldwide. you know, more people get killed by a falling vending machine.
Is that
or,
per year?
Yeah, per year, right? A worldwide, less than four people. And in 2007, only one person died from a shark attack. So, you know, first of all, you know, sharks are not dangerous, you know, and even if they were, would it be okay for us to say that, okay, these animals are dangerous, so we should just kill them all? We don't do that with tigers. We don't do that with elephants. Like, those animals are also dangerous. Is it just because, you know, they're fluffy and, you know, they look cute that we should just protect them and not these really important animals like sharks? So that's the other side that I really want to convey that message, is that, you know, even if they were really dangerous, does it give humans the right to kind of, like, wipe them off? I don't think so. And the last message is that, you know, sharks are amazing, majestic animals. The biggest shark in the world, as I mentioned, is the whale shark. It has no teeth. It feeds primarily on plankton. And, you know, the second biggest shark in the world is the basking shark. And they used to be very popular in Canada, actually, until a fisherman went out and rammed 45 of them in one day because it was getting in the way of his mackerel nets, right?
Oh, my God.
So, and that shark also feeds primarily on plankton, no teeth. There's over 450 species of sharks, and, you know, only a very small handful of them are actually aggressive towards humans. And, you know, there's been, you know, there are divers in the world that, you know, dive with great whites all the time, and even those sharks that are supposedly known as very dangerous, they can, you know, they are animals, and we can be a part of the system together if we learn how to appreciate them and love them, because, you know, in the end of the day, we're not trying to save the world, because the world's always going to be here. We're just trying to save humans. And sharks are a part of this ocean system that is very important for humans, and that's why we need to protect them.
So with your educational outreach towards the community, what kind of feedback are you getting from the Chinese community? I'm curious about that. As you said, Chinese community is deeply rooted in traditional practices.
With our approach, we try to stay really positive. As I mentioned before, there's been campaigns kind of against shark fin soup, and as much as I appreciate the intention of it, we also realize that you have to create conversation with people that versus, you know, telling them what to do, right? So that's why we have you know, the wedding contest, and that's why we do things like, you know, on Chinese New Year, we did Hug a Shark Day. And we came out, you know, in foamy shark costumes, and we ran around hugging people and taking pictures to show them that, you know, sharks aren't scary, they're fun. So overall, like, we've been actually quite surprised that Chinese communities have been very well receiving our campaign, and we're going to be on Fairchild TV, which is the broadcaster. In June, and so that's really exciting to really break into Chinese traditional media, and we got our first Chinese traditional restaurant on board a couple months ago. Chinese restaurant, so it's really picking up, and the conversation's starting, and that's really exciting for us.
What's that restaurant's name again?
It's called Ken's Chinese Restaurant.
Okay, so in a traditional Chinese wedding celebration or any other kind of event where they're serving shark fin soup, what are alternatives that people can use to serve at their events, their weddings, other than the real shark fin soup?
So that's a really good question. I get asked that a lot by, you know, parents of wedding couples.
People want to know, well, what am I supposed to serve my guests, right?
Yeah, so Chinese people have, you know, thousands of different types of soup, especially in Chinese cuisine. You know, we tell people, you know, you could do lobster soup, you could do abalone soup, you could do a bunch of different things. The question that really needs to be asked, I think, is that not what should we replace the soup with, but how can we change our mentality around this soup? Because there's already a lot of options, and it's not that those options, you know, you can't make it for however number many of people. It's that they're scared of trying to find something to replace the prestige value. So, and we're telling people, well, you don't need to replace the prestige value, because we don't need that anymore. We don't need to show that we're, you know, quote unquote wealthy or not wealthy if we have or do not have shark fin soup. So we really try to emphasize the message to couples, like, yeah, here are some options that you can take, but remember, this is your special day, and the one day you can really make a difference. And, you know, you can make a difference to, like, 300 people. That's how many people that are going to be at your wedding banquet.
So it's really about changing the mentality. And I know I've seen on vegetarian menus, there's imitation shark fin soup, which I've been scared to try, but because I'm like, I don't want something that tastes like a shark fin. But I read this week that it's just mung bean vermicelli. So
Yeah, so actually, fake shark fin is, well, shark fin actually itself, it has no taste whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but so the it's just
texture,
cartilage.
I can't imagine.
It's exactly the same. Like, I think the fake and the real is exactly the same.
Yeah. So there is fake shark fin out there, and there's a lot of people who do get it. And we still try to encourage just no shark fin soup in general, whether it's fake or not, because we don't want to perpetuate that idea that it's okay. So we really want to take a stance in letting people know that you should serve a different alternative altogether. But having said that, there is fake shark fin out there. And the shark fin soup, it's essentially chicken or pork broth, like really condensed chicken or pork broth. And then it has, you know, chicken, ripped up chicken inside sometimes, and bean sprouts and shark fin. So the soup itself actually just tastes like chicken broth.
Well, thank you very much, Claudia. I just want to let people know that if they want to enter the contest, the deadline's June 8th, is that correct?
Yeah, it's World Oceans Day.
Okay, and so thank you for coming on the show today to tell us about your organization, Shark Truth, and your campaign against shark finning. For more information on Shark Truth and to enter the contest too, I believe you can visit the website, www.sharktruth.org.
Sharktruth.com.
Sorry. Sharktruth.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. I also urge everyone to watch the feature film Sharkwater, which exposes the abuse in the shark finning industry. As Claudia was saying, it's a really excellent film to watch. Mm-hmm. Really interesting. It's available on DVD.
Great. So you've been listening to Animal Voices Radio Show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver. Remember to sign up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And if you'd like to become a guest, an occasional guest host, email us as well, radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And for next week's show, I haven't got it planned, so it will be a big surprise.
Looking forward to it.
All right.
Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.